Morning. Ooh, I'm nice and loud this morning. Let me turn that down a hair. And as we get started, I'd like to, again, Rachel, I appreciate your sharing with us. My hope is that over time, we can have more and more. Somebody really did a number on our soundboard last week, I think. Let's see here. All right. Do I sound okay? Am I too loud, too echoey? All right, thumbs up, thumbs down. Everybody can hear me, good. All right, but I appreciate the testimonies because we can hear what God wants us to do, but I think it's also good for us to hear how that plays out in the real world. Sometimes a sermon sounds really good in church, but a lot harder when we're out in the street, when we're out looking at our checkbook, when we're out experiencing challenges. And Rachel shared she had some challenges this past week, but that God had come through and provided. And we're thankful for that. But all of us have a testimony of what God's doing. Whether there's three or four of us gathered together, or there's thousands of us gathered together. God is moving, and He's living with us in community. And it's exciting to hear those stories. So if you have one of those stories, you are more than welcome. You're invited. You're encouraged to share. So we get started this morning. I don't know if I changed or if McDonald's changed, but as a kid, I was so excited to go to McDonald's. And I know they used to have a play area, and maybe that was part of it. But it was a fun place to go. It was like if I had to pick a restaurant as a little kid, that was probably going to be it. Today, that's not the case. I try and avoid that place. Do I eat McDonald's? Of course, everybody eats McDonald's. But it's not the thing that we look forward to as adults very often. It's usually the last resort. But as a kid, there were quite a few things that I found interesting, but one that I never really understood, one that was a surprise to me, and that was the Filet-O-Fish. Now, I like fish, and I think they've made it better since I was a kid. But it's pretty much a fish stick smothered in tartar sauce, the piece of electric yellow American cheese on top, and a soggy bun. And if you are a Filet-O-Fish fan, I apologize that I am giving it a hard time. But they weren't great. And I never understood why a burger joint would be serving a fish stick on a bun, especially back when it wasn't like a whole piece of fish. It was more like a chicken nugget, the kind of mix-match pieces of fish all patted together. But this led me to ask some questions. Again, the question, why on the Filet-O-Fish? And I found out as a kid, the reason for the Filet-O-Fish, it was actually the idea of an owner of a store in Cincinnati. And what he found out in kind of a high Catholic, Methodist, Anglican area, that come Lent, he wasn't selling a whole lot of hamburgers, at least not on Fridays. So the Filet-O-Fish was his response to try and get customers in the door, even though they may have given up meat on Fridays for Lent. And then it all made sense to me. But it brought more questions like, what is Lent? And why do we not eat meat on Fridays? And what is fasting? And it took me a while to understand. So what do I get spiritually for not eating a hamburger on a Friday? And I would go to school, and I had a lot of friends that went to different Catholic churches, and they would talk about what they were giving up for Lent. And I went to a church that didn't talk about it. And it didn't talk about it for a lot of reasons. One, we weren't in some of those traditions. And number two, I grew up in a church that took the words of the verses we're going to be looking at very, very seriously. See, I think there's a lot of confusion for us around fasting. A, because there's some things to be confused about, but B, because in the evangelical world, we're taught not to talk about fasting. Jesus gives us the invitation, the encouragement to be secretive, to not show others our fast. And sometimes we take that so seriously that even as people have successful fasts or have patterns of that in their own life, they keep it to themselves and they don't share, even in the discipleship process. So I think my childhood experience with the fillet of fish and trying to wrap my mind around what is fasting and Lent and Fridays and meat and how does that all work together, it kind of embodies the American church's understanding of fasting. Maybe we've heard the words, maybe we haven't. But today I hope that we can look to the words of Jesus and we can demystify fasting. We can get a better understanding of what God's calling us to do, encouraging us to do. And maybe it can become a spiritual discipline in your life that's life-giving and powerful. So let's begin by looking at when you fast, how to understand fasting. Matthew chapter 6, verse 16 says, "When you fast, do not look somber as the hypocrites do, for they disfigure their faces to show others they are fasting. Truly, I tell you, they have received their reward in full." So we're part of the Sermon on the Mount. We're continuing. We're getting close to the end. For context, Jesus has just talked to us about prayer. Now he's talking to us about another spiritual discipline, another way that we can connect with the Father, and that's through fasting. So what is fasting? Fasting, in a nutshell, is abstinence from something, usually food. So it's taking time and saying, we're not going to participate, I'm not going to engage in this. And for the Jewish people, fasting was understood. It was part of the community, it was part of the culture. And the downside of that is it was maybe a little too public, as Jesus addresses with us here. It was maybe a little too in front of others to try and prove that you were spiritual, to try and prove that you were holy. The Pharisees would do what's in this passage. They would darken their face. They would make themselves look somber. So somebody would say, "Oh, you don't look so good. Well, I'm fasting. And that means I'm spiritual and better than you." Well, that's not a very healthy way to go about it, and Jesus is addressing that. But it's abstinence from something. There are a lot of different types of fasts. Today, you can find people will talk about the Daniel fast. That's typically, there's a lot of versions of it, but it's the no sweets, no meats. There's the type of fasting that you hear about, we talked about with Lent, where somebody might give up something. And some of them are sincere, some of them kind of, if we're honest, a little bit ridiculous. But it's this idea of saying, I'm going to abstain from this thing so that I can hopefully grow spiritually. Religious fasting. Because again, you can fast in a lot of ways. If you've ever gone in for blood tests, blood work, your doctor may say you need to fast before you come in. Well, if that's all you do, if you just don't eat for 12 hours because you're going to get blood work done, you can't really expect that you're going to have a whole lot of spiritual growth from that. There's more to spiritual fasting than just not doing something, than just not eating. Religious fasting is abstaining from food or whatever we choose to abstain from to remind us in practice that we don't rely on the physical, on the flesh, on the physical reality alone. Jesus said this so well in Matthew 4:4 when he was fasting, 40-day fast, which in scriptures is the longest that's encouraged, and it's been backed up by medical science. A 40-day fast may not be the healthiest thing for your body, but we know that it's after 40 days that really bad things start to happen. Before 40 days, if you're safe and in the right situation, it could be an okay thing, but definitely not something that I would just run and start your first fast for 40 days. So Jesus is fasting, and Satan comes and tempts him, and he tempts him in a few different ways, but one of Jesus' responses is he says, he answers to Satan, "It is written that man does not live on bread alone, but on every word that comes from the mouth of God." So the idea of fasting spiritually is that we are not relying on food for our sustenance. We're relying on God. And there's some truth to that. It's not that the body is evil and that the flesh needs to be punished. That's not the purpose of fasting. It's to help us reorient our understanding. It's to help us realize in practice that there is a higher spiritual level, that we have needs that go beyond what we eat. And if you look at the typical American, and I would fit into this category, we eat more than we need. Have you heard the adage that we should eat to live, not live to eat? Well, if we're eating and consuming more food than we need, there is a good chance that we're using food to try and meet needs that aren't physical. Does that make sense? We can fill those voids with a lot of things, but Billy Graham said it so well that we all have this God-shaped hole inside of us, and we try and shove so many different things in there to make it fit. Maybe it's social media for some of our teenagers. That's become so addictive. They're on it all the time. I call it doom scrolling, where you just are on the phone and flipping, and there's this endless feed of things that you don't really probably need to know. Could be television. Could be sports. Could be food. Could be an unhealthy relationship. For others, it's substances like drugs and alcohol. But we're trying to fit these things into a hole that only God fills. When we fast, we're reminding ourselves in a physical practice that our needs go beyond the physical. It's not just about getting enough rest, getting enough food, getting enough water. It's about experiencing God. During a typical fast, water is part of it. You would drink plenty of water. Fasts don't have to be real, real long. But it's this idea not just of abstaining, but abstaining and taking that same time to experience relationship with God. Again, the purpose of fasting is relationship. It's not about punishing the body. It should be life-giving. It's not about losing weight. It's not about earning forgiveness. It's not about persuading God of something. People use fasting sometimes for some really unhealthy things. I want this, Lord, and I'm not going to eat until I get it. That's a hunger strike, and God doesn't call us to do that. We don't fast because we feel so guilty about sin that we're trying to pay a penance for it. Again, that's not what God calls us to do. It's about maybe giving up food for a time or something else so that we can experience the grace and the power and the presence and the fullness of God. See, when we fast, one of the reasons that God doesn't want us to mar up our face is because it's supposed to be, again, a very life-giving experience. If you're trying to fast and all you can think about is food, you're doing it wrong. Like, that's not helping. That's not what God's calling you to. He's calling us to replace food for a period of time if we fast with God's presence and God's word and prayer. See, again, abstinence is only half of the equation. The other half is devoting the free time to connecting with God. Prayer, reading scriptures, other contemplative practices. And there's so many. Some of them are hard for me. The idea of just sitting silent before the Lord is hard for me. Spending time to listen, to pray, to experience God. Question, how much free time would you gain in one day if you didn't have to gather, prepare, eat, or clean up after any meals? Well, for many of you, you'd say that's a significant amount of time. That would free up an hour, maybe more hours of the day that I normally would have been eating, preparing, cleaning up, even going to the store or the restaurant to go pick up the food. But if that was true for you today, imagine the first century audience that Jesus is talking to. There wasn't a whole lot to do. Food was a big part of it. Gathering food took time. Just gathering water took time. And so if we save hours, they would save the majority of the day that was devoted to making sure that you had food. And that time wasn't meant to just go away. It was meant to be refocused on God. Jesus says here, when you fast, and I think we have to confront that. When you fast, this means that at least in the first century, that audience was expected to be fasting. So are we expected to fast? I think it's a good question, and there's a few considerations that we have to look at. Is this prescriptive or is this encouraged? Is this something that we are required to do or is this something that we are encouraged to do? Well, I think that we have to understand that for the Jewish people listening to Jesus speak, when he says, when you fast, there was an expectation that they were already fasting, that this was practice that was already there. It's less Jesus saying you have to fast because we don't see a prescription elsewhere to fast. It's not required. It is encouraged other places, but we don't see that Jesus says you have to do this. He fasted. And he talks here about when we fast. But for the first century Jewish audience, this was part of their normal practice. This was very common, like other cultural things for us would be. We also have to understand from health standpoint that the first century wasn't filled with nearly as many diabetics as we have today. Sad truth was insulin wasn't a thing. And diabetics didn't make it very long. So if you're a diabetic, I think you'd have to be really careful about fasting food. I wouldn't encourage you to do it without some talking to your doctor. And so why we have different things that we can fast. It doesn't have to just be food. So when it comes to, is this something that every Christian must do? I think those are considerations. And the third thing that we should consider in that is that for the first century Jewish people, food was different, a different relationship with food than we have today. I mean, today you can go to Kroger or Walmart, although Beth sent me to Walmart this week, and true confession, I hadn't been there in a long time. And it was strange. I was really hungry because I hadn't eaten all day, not because I was fasting, just because I was an idiot. And I hadn't eaten. I'd been really busy just trying to do a lot of things, so I think I had coffee but no food that day. And so when dinner time rolls around, you shouldn't shop hungry. Thankfully, I just grabbed the basket. Otherwise, I think I would have filled up a cart with things we didn't need. But if you haven't been to Walmart recently, I was surprised. There were giant freezer cases that didn't have anything but like a half-open bag of hash browns sprung across the bottom. Felt like I was going to have to fight somebody over a frozen pizza. But I didn't. But we're used to this idea that if we want food, we just go get it. But for the first century Christian or non-Christian, just living at that time, food was not the easiest thing to get. And you might go a day or so hungry. So this idea of going without food and then feasting when you had food, there was no refrigeration. There was not great preservation techniques. And so when food was bountiful, you put on a little bit of weight. And you feasted. Feasting was such a big part of Jewish tradition. You ate the food because it was there, but then you went into sparser periods of time where you had less food. And you may have fasted by choice or by necessity. So this was part of the wiring of the first century folks. All of those that were there, they knew what it was to go without food in a way that maybe we don't. I'm not sure the first century Christian would get as hangry as we might after 12 hours with no food. But that being said, those caveats, I think at very least this is an encouragement. That fasting is a spiritual practice and discipline that we can benefit from. And if it's not from food because there are special considerations, maybe it's from TV or social media. Because if we're honest, there are some of us who spend more time watching TV than we do preparing food anymore. For the first century without TV, that was a bit different story. But it's about taking something in our daily life, something in our normal routine, and replacing that with experiencing God. We're all often so busy. And so it's about taking the time and making that change. The second point for this morning is that when you fast, don't make a scene. Start again with 16. When you fast, do not look somber as the hypocrites do, for they disfigure their faces and show others they are fasting. Truly, I tell you, they have received their reward in full. But when you fast, put oil on your head and wash your face. Just like we talked about with prayer, here with fasting, we have to understand who our audience is. Are we doing this for man's praise? Are we doing this so that others will think that we are holy and righteous and give us the attaboy, you did a good job? Or are we doing this for God? Because it's important that we know. If we are doing this for others' praises, then we ought to not. Because no one will be impressed by your fasting. If you go and tell everybody else and say, you know what, I just finished a 30-day fast, no one's going to say, like, great. You're going to be obnoxious and annoying to everybody you tell. I promise. Like, I see this sometimes in spiritual contexts where you see people bragging about their spiritual disciplines and no one ever is like, that's amazing. That kind of pomp and that arrogance, it comes out and it's not appealing. So it's funny when it says that you've received your reward, because I don't know what earthly reward you receive. Maybe you lost a few ounces or a pound. Have you ever seen a sign that made you a little sad for humanity? Makes you a little sad because you know that if there, it's something you feel like shouldn't have had to have a sign, but the very fact that there is a sign means that somebody realized they had to have a sign. One of these examples, and there's many, I take pictures and I'll send them to Beth or Landon, my business partner, when I see signs, because I kind of want to know, like, where do you even buy that sign? There was one in Cincinnati, and it shows this mangled bicycle, like, upright with somebody falling off in, like, a railroad track thing because they've got cable cars that go through the streets. And it's a very colorful and painful-looking picture of what might happen, I guess, if you ride into the groove. But my favorite was when I was at the Rocky Mountain National Park on my last visit, and I went into the bathroom. And the bathroom had these, like, stick figures. They get people from all over the world, so they can't write it out. It was all very descriptively shown. And it had a lot of X's with these stick figures and what not to do. And it said, don't stand on top of the toilet. Squat and do your business. Standing on top of the toilet, which I was like, wow, that's acrobatic. Don't do that on the sink. Don't do that in the middle of the floor. Don't do it on the floor right outside the door to the bathroom. And I'm just scratching my head, like, who needed that sign? But somebody did. And the same thing is true here when it comes to fasting. If Jesus is mentioning this, it meant somebody needed it, and it appears that that was the Pharisees. The same ones that would schedule their time of prayer to make sure that when the time of prayer came, they were on a street corner where they could recite a prayer that they had memorized so eloquently for the world to hear. It's the same ones that would go and put a little extra dirt on their face and make themselves look a little extra solemn because they wanted to be asked and they could say, well, I'm on a fast. Problem is, a disfigured face is a terrible testimony. If it truly expresses your experience with what God is doing in your fast, then you're doing the fast wrong. If you are miserable and hurting and hungry, then I'd say go get a Snickers or something because the fast isn't helping. That's not the point. The point of the fast is to experience the presence and the grace of God. And when we do that, our outward appearance should model what God's doing inside of us. I've done this well and I've done this not well. But that is what Jesus is talking about with the idea of secrecy. I think we can take this too far, though. Well, no one probably wants to hear you brag about your fast. I doubt you'll get much of a reward for that. If you're in spiritual community with someone and God does something through the fasting process, if you experience God in a deep new way, I think it's okay to share your experience with your brothers and sisters that you're walking down the road of faith with. In fact, if you don't, how are they going to understand how maybe they could benefit from growing their practice of spiritual disciplines as well? If you're praying and God speaks to you, it's okay to share that. You don't have to keep it a secret. In fact, don't keep it a secret from your spouse, because that's going to be annoying for them and for you when they keep trying to ask you to eat that big plate of dinner. We're coming up to the anniversary of 9/11, and like many of you, that was a significant day for me. I date myself a little bit here, but that was my freshman year of college. And it was a weird time because I'm just getting started with my college classes and excited about my future. And there was so much confusion that day and anxiety. We didn't know where we were being attacked from. We didn't know what was next. I didn't know if I was going to be conscripted into the military because I was already considering service. I didn't know what was going to happen and what my future looked like. And I wasn't alone. So that day, school was canceled. And I went and walked downtown and ended up in a church, one of the churches downtown, and started praying. And I decided to fast, and it was going well. And a day into the fast, I was feeling great, and I was reading the Word, and I was encouraged, and God's grace was good, and the anxiety was melting away as I was just leaning and trusting Him. And I was driving somewhere else, and I saw a sign that said, "We desperately need blood donors." So I was like, "I'll do that." And I'm 24, 30 hours into a fast, whatever. And I show up, and they said, "Well, you know, you're a perfect candidate to do the double red donation, so we'll do that." And I said, "That's great, I'll do that." And I'm not even thinking about the fact that I haven't eaten. And I get through, and I feel fine. I'm not doing too bad. In fact, I'm really excited. The Holy Spirit's good. And I come sit down on the little recovery table there at the Red Cross, and they're like, "Well, we'd like you to eat a cookie." I'm like, "No, I'm not going to eat a cookie today. We'll at least have some orange juice." I'm like, no, thank you. I'll take a water. And the nurse there is kind of getting stern. She's like, here's a table of snacks. Eat one of them. And I'm like, no, thank you. I'm like, no, you're going to eat something. And goes back and forth a little bit until finally I said, "Well, no, today I'm fasting." And I got the biggest lecture. I mean, I think I was chased out of there being yelled at. And so we don't want to brag about it, but we also want to be smart about it. But God's grace was good. And so this idea of keeping it secret, again, it's about not making a scene. It's about not being haughty, and it's about understanding who our audience is. And that is God, because that's where our reward comes from. But I don't believe this means that you can't share what God is doing with someone you trust in community, whether that's your spouse. It's okay to come to your pastor and share a story of God's grace and His power and what He did as you had an experience there. Like, those are exciting things to hear. And finally, when you fast, keep your focus on God. Verse 18, "So that it will not be obvious to others that you are fasting, but only your Father who is unseen. And your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you." Twice in our passage here, rewards are mentioned. So what are they? Well, it's not a new car. It's not a new house. It's not a lot of money. God isn't a genie. And fasting isn't the way we rub the lamp. But I have been, in fact, to be honest, the only Christian circles that I hear talk about fasting often. One of them is the Catholic Church, and it's around Lent. The other is more of the charismatic church, and fasting seems, again, to be presented more like how you rub the genie's lamp to get something from God, but that's not how God works, and that's not the treasure He talks about. When we see treasures in Scripture, we see that they are treasures often in heaven. One of the best examples of this is crowns that we lay down at Jesus' feet. So we are obedient. We hear, "Well done, good and faithful servant." What an amazing reward. And at the believer's judgment, we're given crowns, we're given these things to lay up before God and give back to Him, which is a great privilege. I also think that it extends to the idea of seeing people that we've discipled in heaven. I am looking forward to finding out that I planted a seed, that I encouraged someone, or at least I very much hope that this happens, that someday maybe I didn't see them again the rest of my earthly life, but I run into them in heaven, and we give a huge embrace and a hug because I was a part of, not to say look at me, but the joy of seeing that I helped build the kingdom and I sacrificed or I ministered in a way that made that impact on others. We have the gift of God's grace and His presence, and I have learned this past year how important that is, especially as we've talked about being at the Ronald McDonald House and meeting families that are going through so much yet don't have that same hope and that same grace in their life. It's so valuable. Then we have the fruit of the Spirit and God's wisdom, but it's not about stuff. And finally, as we wrap up here, there's a real sense, if you look at our senses, if you look at the way that we perceive the world, they are incredibly dynamic. We've all heard about how someone who loses their sight might end up with almost supernatural hearing. And with Anna, she's got this ear stimulator on, and it's amazing to me how jolts of electricity through the ear can help bring back stomach work and take away pain in different areas of the body. But with fasting, something similar happens. We're not punishing the body again, but we learn that we can overcome some of these urges and desires that we have. If we can go a couple of days without eating and we can tame the stomach, then can we tame the desires of the flesh and the lust that we have? Can we tame the anger that we're struggling with that's visceral and reactive? Can we tame the tongue and the gossip and the negative words that we speak? Can we take captive our thoughts and choose to focus on what God is doing and not all the negative things in the world around us? We've all seen those like high school football sports movies where there's one player on the team who says, I can't do this, I can't do this, I can't do this. I think it's Remember the Titans where the coach puts the blindfold, but it's pretty much in every high school sports movie. They put the blindfold and they have him go as fast as he can go or as far as he can go. And he thinks he might have made it a third of the way across the field, and he made it all the way across the field, carrying somebody on his back. We're capable of far more than we think we are. And when we go through these experiences, we learn that we have power through the Holy Spirit over this body, over this flesh, that it is a tool that serves God, that we can have our needs met outside of physical gratification and pleasures. So when we do this, we turn down the voice of the devil and the flesh and the world, our culture, the desires that we have in our physical body, the temptation from the devil, and we hear God. That's the purpose of fasting. It's a reorienting where God's voice becomes more and more clear. And every time we turn that volume up, when we get to understand and hear God's voice better and better, then when everything is loud again, when all the distractions are back, we at least know God's voice. We can pinpoint that in a crowd. I've been amazed at taking Beth, and really, we had another mom, my business partner's mom. We went as a reboot family. This is my office. We all went to Crazy Pins. And if you've never been to Crazy Pins, for me that has a little bit of ADD and is a little sensory off, it is a hard place. There is noise, the arcade and the kids and the bowling and the music. It's just all of it. There's tons of people there. It's a big place. But I am amazed that Beth could hear across the room the cry out of her child when they twist their ankle or bump their knee. Moms can do that, because they know not only their child's voice, but they know their child's cry. I'm sure you've experienced something like that. No one else might hear it, but you hear it from across the room, no matter the distraction. Well, the more that we discipline ourselves, whether that's through prayer or fasting or the scriptures, we begin to understand the voice of God so that we can hear what may be a still small voice across the room through the distraction. So if you have ever been interested in another way to grow in your faith, remember that Jesus doesn't say if you fast, he says when you fast. So it's an encouragement. But do it for the right reasons. Do it for the right reasons to re-engage, to hear God's voice, not just to lose a few pounds or impress your neighbor.